Hey, everybody, it's Denzel Washington. I'm here to introduce a couple of friends of mine, Nick Reynolds and Steve Harness. These boys put on one hell of a podcast called The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. Overall, you might say it equalizes things. All right, fellas, do your thing.
Does so we do kind of equalize your life through entertainment, through news. Welcome to the podcast, The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. Thank you, Denzel.
Yeah, there you go. I do like those Equalizer movies. I like this new genre of like old dudes that can kick ass. Like every Liam Neeson movie nowadays.
You know? I couldn't agree more, dude. They're some of my favorites. And I don't know if it's because it gives me hope that I'm maybe I too could still kick ass. Or I just like watching, you know, me setting a timer for 10 seconds and then making all that chaos happen.
Think about that. When we were kids, like it was Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, all these muscle bound dudes. And now it's like, you know, some old black guy. It just knows how to stealthily kill you.
What does Liam Neeson say?
A particular set of Skittles.
Yes, that's right. I love those movies, dude.
That's great, yeah. Well, yes, welcome back to another show. You can find our website, thevocalminority.net. Nick and I also have a particular set of skills. It's yakking our gums and saying mildly intelligent and or occasionally funny things. So join us.
We have all the social medias. Go find them. TikTok while it's still around. We have YouTube. We're on Threads. Instagram. We're on Reddit. YouTube. Blue Sky. Go check them out and have a little fun with us on the social media sites.
Yeah, do find us on Blue Sky. That thing is blowing up for everyone, our page in particular. We have deleted Twitter from everything in our world. So Blue Sky is a great one for the text-based social medias. But yeah, TikTok, YouTube for the videos, and Reddit too, of course. By the way, Nick, I started on Reddit, you can start your own pages because that's really what Reddit's all about. You either go to a page or you have your news feed that's got a compiling of everyone else's pages, right?
Yeah.
So I decided I'm going to start a Trump resistance page on Reddit. And I want it to be a platform for us, but I want it to be everyone else sharing too. News articles, videos, other podcasts, whatever. Anything Trump resistance oriented. So we're up to two members. I'm one of them. So if everyone can go find that thing, it's great. Because right now I'm posting stuff for me and someone else. I don't know who the person is, but,
Just start slow, dude. It's slow and steady. One of the, it just starts with one, okay?
Yeah. And no one wants to be the one. So we need some of our people. Go just subscribe. The more people, the more, normal it looks. I find subreddit pages that have like 1,000 people. I'm like, this is not even worth my time. So right now we have two. So we need to grow that thing. So go find, just look it up on Reddit, Trump resistance. You'll find it.
With you as one of them, though, Steve, I mean, it adds so much credibility to the page that I would think it'd be taking off before we know it.
Well, it's a small little click right now. You can just hang out with me on the page.
It's like it's like getting to go see one of your favorite concerts with just you and the artist. Like, go hang out with Steve, please.
There you go. And we do have a comment line, too. You can call 844-48-VOCAL. It's a voicemail. You just leave a comment. We play it on the show. It's not live, but you can use your telephone as a microphone if you still use a telephone for anything.
And get vocal.
Welcome to the show.
We're just welcoming you to our program, and we're glad you're here. Hey, the holidays are here. Things are happening. A lot going on around this great country of ours, don't you think?
I do. Holiday season is here, a time that brings out the best in humanity and often the worst if you're in any sort of retail environment.
That's sad to think about. You're right. I mean, they are the extremes of, people doing great things and people doing just completely awful things that you wonder, how are you even a human with a heart?
Yeah. And remember, the war on Christmas is a myth. Don't believe Fox News. They drum this thing up every holiday season that you're not allowed to say Merry Christmas. It's not true. No one gives a crap if you say Merry Christmas. You can say Happy Holidays to cover all the bases, which I actually find more succinct, but you can say Merry Christmas.
What do you do? Do you alternate, or is it always a Happy Holiday or always a Merry Christmas?
I mean, like if I'm on the radio or something, I just say Happy Holidays because I not only, if I want to just be very narrow, I'm just covering Christmas and New Year's. Okay, forget about Kwanzaa and Hanukkah. But honestly, I'm trying to cover all of those things. But if you want to be some conservative redneck that wants to shun all of those other things, that happy holidays can still mean Christmas and New Year's, okay?
Yeah. That's how I am. You know, once in a while, I'll give you a Merry Christmas. Here's the deal. You say Merry Christmas to me, I'll probably say Merry Christmas back. But if I initiate, I always say happy holidays, you know, because for the exact same reason.
I mean, if somebody wished me a happy Hanukkah, why would I possibly be upset by that? And likewise, I've never said Merry Christmas to a real human and then be offended by it.
Right. Of course not, dude. It's a made up thing, like you said.
This is a Fox News thing where they find one liberal, one town, one place that made some stink, and they try to make you think, oh, this is a liberal thing. They all don't want Merry Christmas anymore. Like,
it went big when Starbucks decided, you know what, we want to be inclusive to everyone around this holiday season and not write just Merry Christmas, but Happy Holidays. And Fox News had a field day with it. And yeah, now it's become a war on Christmas that doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's a very Americanization of Christmas, which, unlike some of our holidays like 4th of July or Thanksgiving, you know, those are American holidays. Christmas is relatively universal. Everyone maybe has a little twist on it, but Christmas is pretty widely celebrated. But America has somehow tried to co-opt it and make it into this fake political argument that people are out to get Christmas.
So happy holidays is what we're saying.
I'm saying Merry Christmas, goddamn it, 'cause no one cares. But, you know, there is a ever-increasing list of reasons why people don't like Americans. And I stumbled across this article that's got a decent little list here of reasons why. Our politics, I don't know if it's going to be specifically on this list, but obviously it's what's made us a laughing stock in a lot of other countries. And I believe you've seen some of that up close and personal.
Yes, for sure, dude. And Europe and Mexico, I can speak to both of them. And yeah, laughing stock. Like, what the F are you guys doing over there?
On many topics, I feel like America probably does deserve to be criticized, but not on every topic. I don't know that we're the greatest country anymore on the planet, but we are in a lot of categories, as we've discussed before, pop culture being the biggest one. So let's run through this list and see why the rest of the world hates us and see if there's any merit to any of this and if there's any chance in hell we could correct any of this behavior.
I'll be the judge. Go ahead.
Exactly. Speaking of behavior, the first one is loud public behavior. Walking through tourist spots in any major city, you'll often spot American travelers before hearing them. They're naturally louder, speaking volumes and events and whatnot. I mean, I don't know if this is a Karen kind of thing, but there are a lot of loud, obnoxious people throughout American events, be it a county fair, a concert, probably even a church, quite frankly.
I suppose so. Yeah, I mean, do I notice that we are louder people just in general out and about in public? Not necessarily. But when you bring it back to like a Karen entitled type thing, maybe. I guess in all my travels, I haven't traveled enough to really make that decision or not. I don't know if I would agree with that one.
What about concert crowds? Because you did go see Dave Matthews in European venues over this past year. How do concert crowds in Europe compare to American crowds? And talk about that whole front row thing, because that's a clearly distinct difference.
That's interesting that you bring that up, because I didn't think about it. But that we are different in that regard. We have certain things as part of the Dave Matthews Band community, like when you go to multiple shows, like you start to see things that fans do during certain songs. That did not carry into the European tour, and the people there felt like, what are you guys doing? Like, you're being so rude right now. You're either singing along or you're chanting something, which has been normalized in America. They found it completely rude. Like, why would you do that? These people are performing for us. Shut your mouth.
Singing along with the music at a concert? Wow, really?
Yeah. And I mean, on one level, I guess I can understand it, but I was kind of taken aback by it. Like, oh, you guys just sit here and be completely quiet during a rock concert? Like, that's different to me. And that whole first row thing that you brought up is, you know, I have tried and tried and tried in America to get first row to Dave Matthews. They call it down in the pit many times. And unless you've got someone you know or that special ticket to get you in there, or you get there, you know, 30 hours early, you're not going to get there. But in that European tour, both times, dude, I showed up an hour before the concert and I walked right up to the pit, the front row.
Right. There wasn't some big mass of crowd waiting at the door. That's hilarious. So if a concert starts at 8 p.m. in Europe, what time do people start showing up at?
We got there at 7, okay? And then I started seeing it start to fill in like around 7:30, but people were still walking in at 7:55. Wow. You know, and casually, not in a rush, just, you know, and you would never see that here.
Yeah, well. That is a distinct difference. I don't know if that's obnoxious concert behavior to sing along or to want to show up early to get better seats in the pit or whatever, but that is a distinct difference in the level of, animation or involvement.
Sure. Yeah, no. Yeah, that's a good point. But as far as just being loud out in public, I don't know if I can agree with that on the list.
Interesting. What about bars in Europe? Did you think they were any more loud or obnoxious, or are they a little more subdued?
No, they're loud and obnoxious. I mean, maybe even more so, you know. I don't know. I guess culturally speaking, like, some people drink more. Some people get down and party with drinking, and in other countries they don't. But in Europe, I mean, there are loud people in bars. You go to an Irish bar, you don't think that it's going to be loud and boisterous and, you know, people having a good time? Yeah, for sure it is.
It's interesting. I watch a lot of Karen videos. I've seen a few that are in like Great Britain or something, but most of the Karens, 98% of them are definitely American.
Agreed. Yes. If we're bringing it back to the Karens, yes, people want attention and they're entitled and they are not afraid to get loud in a public place, but I don't think it's the majority.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, running through a list of reasons why other people don't like Americans, obnoxious behavior we do here. This is one that I've evolved on over the course of my life, watching geopolitical issues unfold, and that is political interference. American government involvement in other countries' affairs creates a deep-seated resentment among local populations. The Middle East is probably the best example of this. I, growing up in this country, came from a standpoint of, you know, we are the biggest, we are the best, we're the ones that helped unite the world during World War One and Two. Everyone looks to us for our leadership. And that is something I don't think we should, you know, step away from, because someone does have to be the leader. Someone has to be the leader of NATO and all of these things, even if it's just symbolically, like that's America's role. But I can see if I grew up in the Middle East and I was being occupied by America all the time, if they were bombing my country and sending troops in, like, of course that would build resentment.
It's interesting because, yes, I think that it does build resentment to part of the people. Because, like, I know when Rachel was in the military, she used to have, like, kids that would adore the American soldiers and the presence that was in the country and, you know, run after the trucks to want candy and want to just spot an American. But, yeah, if you're trying to do your own thing in your own country, I could definitely see why. Like, just leave us to our own devices, dude.
Right. And, you know, sometimes good intentions go astray. Collateral damage, you know, it's a real thing. If we're doing a drone strike to try to kill some terrorist leader, that's cool. But if it's at a family wedding and innocent people, quote unquote, are there at that wedding and they're getting killed, the wives, right, the children, like, yeah, if that was your cousin, your niece, your sister, your son that got killed by an American drone strike, even if you're against whoever they were striking, that would probably build some pretty deep-seated resentment.
Yes. And just for us to think that even if we do technically know better, to think that we know better for everybody's benefit across the board, I could see why that would come off as arrogant and, you know, just not right. Like, hey, we've got our own thing going here. This is how we've been doing it for a long time. Leave us alone.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm not trying to give up the moral high ground. A lot of people have said with the war in Ukraine that we should just stay out of that. And, you know, we're sticking up for a sovereign nation that was invaded. We are part of NATO, not that Ukraine is. But, you know, we're trying to lead the moral high ground coalition that we're going to help out a country like that. On one level, I think we should stay out of some conflicts around the world, but we have to retain the moral high ground. So maybe there's a better way to balance it. If we're going to occupy a country, maybe we should be helping to build more schools and homes and giving money to more aid programs. Like, that is money well spent beyond the bombs and the missiles and stuff.
Sure. But, I mean, you bring up Ukraine. I mean, yeah, a moral high ground. Yeah, I feel like that for sure. But we're also not there just for the moral high ground, right? We're trying to protect the spread of that happening to us and other countries that are involved with NATO. Like, there's a lot of reasons that we go do that shit, and it's not all altruistic.
No, for sure. But if we're not doing it, a bunch of the other countries won't, because they don't want to stand alone against Russia or China. But if America's got your back, now all of a sudden you're emboldened. So, you know, it's like the facts of life. You take the good, you take the bad. OK, that's America. Yeah. So we need to do better. We're trying to do better in a lot of ways, but you still do need us. And that's where I get to defending America, because when you are in trouble, who do you look to? It's not Germany first. It's not Scotland first or something. You look to the coalition of those countries led by America.
Yes, so I agree.
You still need us, okay?
Yes, we are still relevant. You need us.
Right. The next one, the reasons why people hate Americans. Environmental impact. Americans use more resources per person than any other nationalities, setting an unsustainable example. Yeah, we're into high consumption around here. I mean, you can certainly point to India and China as being big polluters as well. And I hate it, by the way, when people say, like, well, why should we clean up our planet, you know, or our country? China's not going to do it. India's not going to do it. They're not going to do it if we're not going to do it. We're the moral high ground and more than just military, you know, force. If we lead the effort on environmental stuff, others will follow. If we don't lead it, they never will.
Oh, 100%. You always hear lead by example. Like, we definitely got to do that if we want other people to do it. And when they talk about the rate of consumption with Americans, like, yeah, you can see some of the pollution and things that are happening there. But the way that we consume things, from food to gasoline to clothes to, I mean, all the things that can plague this country, is unbelievable. Everything's become disposable in this country, and it is not in other countries. I know this.
Yeah, again, we got to sort of lead the way. Not that I'm a big fan of, like, paper straws. I've given up on straws, period, because I feel bad now with the plastic straws. I know they're bad, but I have this, I don't know if it's a phobia or what it is. I don't know if some people have this to a lesser extent. I hate wet paper. God damn it. Wet paper skeeves me out, makes me want to dry heave. So the idea of putting a paper straw and sucking liquid through it, and over the course of the dinner, it's getting soft and soggy. Ah.
I don't have that phobia, and I still don't like a paper straw, but they've come up with something better. I drank through a straw that for 1 hour, 1 hour's time, it will stay solid. And if you haven't finished your beverage within 1 hour that you are drinking through a straw, there's something wrong with you. Maybe you're the problem.
Yeah. You don't know what it was made out of? Like hemp or something?
Something like that. Yeah. Something, you know, it wasn't flimsy. It felt like a good plastic piece. But, you know, over an hour time, yeah, then it starts to degrade.
See, that'd be nice if they could do like a marijuana edible straw. So I drink out of it for the first 30 minutes and then I eat it. And it's just a win-win.
It just dissolves into your drink, dude. And then you polish off the drink. That'd be wonderful.
There's no waste then at all, right? You drink out of the straw, you ate the straw or drank it or whatever. I mean,
yeah, we copyright that just so everybody knows.
Real quick here. Brilliance on the show, I tell you. I drank at some coffee house the other day, a locally owned around here. It's a great little coffee house. But they closed at like 6 and I showed up at 5. And they told me in the last hour, we don't let you drink here. In other words, everything's served in a to-go cup. If you want to sit here and drink, fine, but we're not giving you dishes that we have to go wash because we're trying to close up, which I can respect that. But this new environmentally friendly cup they gave me, it was like an old school oil canister. It had this built-in spigot coming off the top, and it was all paper. It almost looked like a Chinese to-go box that folds up, and in the top was this spigot. And that thing got wet and soggy after 2 sips. If I didn't love that coffee so much, I would have thrown the freaking thing away, and I'm never going back to that place after 5.
Listen, dude, there is a reason. I mean, when we were in elementary school, you know, you used to drink milk at lunch, and the way that, you know, envelope you opened up to drink the milk, like, it, I mean, that disgusts me.
It was fuzzy, right? There was that little hairy stuff.
Yes, dude. It was falling apart and so gross. So, yeah, that's a bad idea.
Right. So let's work on smart ways not to gross me out, but save the
yeah.
All right. Next thing on the list, reasons why Americans are increasingly disliked worldwide. Social media dominance. American social media platforms and influencers dominate worldwide. This is one of the things, though, where I'm going to defend America. Like I said, pop culture, we reign supreme. Other cultures can take over the lead on pop culture any day they want. They just can't because we're cooler, we're more creative, we have a longer history. So if we're dominating your social media, whether it's the platform or the influencers, it's because we're doing it better. Okay? I'm going to have a little American pride on that one.
You can take the American pride. Yeah, I mean, it's just like you always say, like, if the product sells, then the public is spoke, right? So, yeah, if you're consuming our social media, like, I don't need to feel bad for that. You look at places, I can't remember exactly where this was, but it was somewhere in China that had a little town that they built that was like an American city block. Everything there was an American city block, and the way that it filled out and people started purchasing was incredible. Like, there is something that draws other countries to America and wanting to be like us in some regards, but you could say the same for a Chinatown. Like, and when I go to San Francisco, I go to Chinatown because it's great, you know.
Sure. Listen, people aren't still coming to our country for our great healthcare or our political system. They are coming here, though, because of our pop culture, the music industry, the movie industry, all of that kind of stuff. We still do dominate because we're making the best product. Okay?
Okay. Enough said.
Enough said. Next one on the list, I think I might also have to defend reasons why people are hating Americans worldwide. Our fast food culture export. The spread of American fast food chains around the world is causing resentment. Well, then don't freaking eat there. You know, the free market is a global concept. Just because we build a McDonald's there doesn't mean you have to go eat there. If you don't want to eat there, it'll go away.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know why that would bother anyone. I love it when other fast food places from other countries come here because I want a variety.
Yeah, I love Panda Express. I assume that's a Chinese-based company.
I don't know if it is or not. I mean, that's definitely American Chinese food, right?
Yeah. But no, I remember when I was in England years ago, and it's been too long, but I came up with this theory that if McDonald's and Starbucks want to take over the planet, there are Starbucks and McDonald's everywhere. If those are just little, you know, ninjas being trained at every outlet around, they could just take over because we've got them strategically placed everywhere on planet Earth. So if we militarize McDonald's and Starbucks, we could dominate this planet in a heartbeat.
I do have a bone to pick with Starbucks because there are Starbucks everywhere. The Starbucks in London, the Starbucks in Cancun, all right? The food is so much better in Starbucks in those two places that I don't know what we're doing wrong here.
Why? Why? You said that Rachel, like, dreams of some of the Starbucks in England or wherever she was.
It's true.
Like, why? Why is it better? Is it different menu options? Prepared differently? What?
Different menu options, yes. We're like, you know, we have, you can get your croissant with an egg and a piece of, you know, turkey bacon on it here at Starbucks. There, you can get a wonderful croissant filled with sausage and different meats and wonderful, just wonderful things. Sweet treats, savory treats. They have a whole different menu.
It's crazy. There has to be a reason why there's a difference. Supply chain or cost of goods or something logical, I would assume.
Or the people who have spoken, and it's just better food choices, you know, from over there.
Well, I can only hope someone at Starbucks is listening and gives us a chance to have this better food option.
I hope so.
I did see someone kind of railing on Starbucks the other day on some national news channel about that we should be supporting local coffee houses and not Starbucks. Well, you know what? As someone who lived in Seattle for 10 years, and you, Nick, born and raised, still living in Seattle, that was a local coffee shop in Seattle for a long time. The only reason it's taken over the world is because they're doing it better than everyone. Why do we have to punish somebody like Starbucks, who literally started as a one single shop down there at Pike's Place, the market, and expanded globally from there? They expanded for a good reason, because they're pretty freaking good.
Yeah, because people want them. That's exactly why. And I know there's that group of people out there that says, I hate Starbucks coffee. Well, the good news is you don't have to drink there. But the majority of people enjoy Starbucks coffee. And after all, you coffee shops, you other little coffee shops that I do patronize from time to time, you would not be able to sell your coffee for $7 a cup if Starbucks hadn't produced the model on it, making it not seem odd to spend $8 on a cup of coffee.
It's very fair. You know, McDonald's started fast food, which allowed Wendy's and Burger King to kind of ride their coattails. So, you know, Starbucks is what they are because they've been successful. And everything is local somewhere. You know, people always talk about local bands. You know, every band is local somewhere. You just now know them because they're international and huge. But
it's true.
I don't want to punish success. Okay.
We're not going to punish it. Starbucks, you're great.
Right. Here's one thing I will admonish, though, that apparently is an American thing and why people hate us, the tipping culture. The American practice of tipping has become influencing service industries worldwide. This creates confusion and pressures as to who you should be tipping and how much or whatever. But apparently that's our fault. And I will say it's gotten way out of control.
Way out of control. And it's because that we haven't kept up with minimum wages in this country that we've been made to feel like we need to tip for everything every time we pick up food. You know, I'm tired of it, and I'm tired of being made to feel like a piece of crap. I was just at Goodwill this past weekend, and I got a long line of people behind me, and the lady's like, you know, would you like to round up to make, you know, us give our services to people in need? And I was like, nope. And she looked at me like I was the biggest asshole in the world. And I look back and everyone's just staring at me. I'm like, do you guys not realize that this is not what you think it is? Stop rounding up. Make the donation on your own if you want to donate.
Totally. This is part of why tipping culture has got out of control, because we all have this guilt trip that we're laying on ourselves from the peering eyes around us, we feel.
Yep.
And I will tell you, at the grocery store the other day, I got that whole thing. You want to round up for this blah, blah. I was like, nope, I'll make the donation myself if I want to. This checker woman, who was probably in her 60s, spent, I'm not joking, at least 2 minutes lecturing me about how, well, if you save the receipt and if you do a cumulative donation over the course of a year, you can write a portion of this off on your own personal taxes. You should talk. I'm just like, lady, you are not a tax advisor. Like, stop giving me deduction advice. And I don't even know that you're right. And you're really pissing everyone off, because she was done doing my groceries. She's just sitting here lecturing me about the tax codes according to the cashier at the freaking grocery store.
That's what I mean, dude. Everyone is here to make you feel like a pile of crap if you don't want to round up, if you don't want to donate. I'm done doing it. I do it on my own when I want to do it. I'm not going to be pressured into it anymore.
Yes, exactly. The next one on this list, I got to see what they're talking about here. Healthcare system export. As we've talked about in the show, America has a uniquely terrible healthcare system that really isn't anywhere else. So are we exporting this? Other countries worry deeply about the influence of the American healthcare model on their own systems. The idea of profit-driven healthcare scares people in other countries with universal healthcare. Well, it should scare you, because it's a terrible freaking system, but I don't see it taking over other countries. I don't know why it would.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the worry is that, you know what, people don't hate this healthcare system and how it works in America if you're wealthy. Okay. And the problem is that if that does start to expand and people are realizing, oh, yeah, if I have cancer and Donnie has cancer, I'm more wealthy than Donnie, so I have a better chance of survival. If you bring that into other healthcare markets, yeah, it's going to, what you have is going to collapse. But hopefully, if you have civilized health care, you shouldn't have to worry about it. But I guess that threat is always there because people are greedy.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about a Europe. Our system sucks. Everyone can see it. We're in massive denial around here. So I think your system will be just fine. But on a related topic, on one of last week's podcast, you had brought up the news story about the CEO of the United Health Insurance or whatever, who got assassinated, broad daylight, New York City, you know. And when we first talked about it, that was day of. And we were just talking about the increase in random violence and whatnot in this country. Are you as floored as I am by the backlash against this guy, the social media people that are just laughing and ridiculing him?
Let me tell you that we do two podcasts every week, and we ran out of time on our last podcast earlier. I had it as part of my story because I am shocked to a certain degree. Morally, I'm shocked that people are like laughing and, you know, playing, you know, songs like Dead or Alive and Xing CEOs out of different healthcare corporations, that this is all kind of just a big joke. So, but on another level, like, I understand where the vitriol comes from for these CEOs of healthcare companies, but we're a civilized nation, dude. We cannot just start murdering people because we don't like it. There's another way to change things. So, yeah, I am floored by it.
Yeah. I mean, on this show, we have a long history of making fun of, you know, celebrity deaths or whatever, poking fun at things because, you know, it's fun. It's shocking. It's whatever. It's fun to make a, you know, Chandler Bing joke when Matthew Perry dies or whatever. But this was just a normal citizen. I mean, I know he was the CEO for a healthcare company, but I never saw this coming, that so many people would be dancing on this guy's grave and making all the jokes. And I get that there's a lot of resentment towards our healthcare system. I have been a victim of it myself, so I get it. But still, this is not the head of even the head of an oil company. I don't know that I'd be dancing if they got executed in the street. So
it shocked me too. I think part of it that makes sense to me why people are so angry is because Brian Thompson, in particular, United Healthcare Company had the highest rates of denials. So you have to think this CEO, this guy that's leading this healthcare company, is making these all happen. So I understand why people are like, I heard a lot of personal stories on social media of people saying like, yep, my mom died because of him. My dad died because of him. He was denied, denied, denied. So I understand it to a certain degree. It's just probably not the right way to make it happen.
Yeah. Not to mention emboldening, what else then? What other CEOs now get to be executed and we're all going to laugh at it? Like,
and on all the other healthcare companies, all the CEOs have been removed from their website. You know, like, people are taking this seriously. But then you got to also think, like, if we're just going after the oligarchs, like, is Elon Musk on that list now? Like, are we creating this? I keep seeing there's a lot more of us than there are of them. Like, yeah, but we can't, murder's illegal. Like, you can't kill people.
And I don't think it's going to have any tangible results. You think the next CEO is all of a sudden going to now change all their policies to be more moral or whatever? Like,
well, I don't know if you saw, but like Blue Cross Blue Shield was just saying that they were putting a cap on anesthesia for surgeries, that if your surgery went too long, you were going to have to pay for the extra anesthesia. Well, this happened like a day before they were making that policy, and they rolled it back. Maybe some of the pressure will, you know.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. But yeah, I was really shocked at the mocking and the ridiculing. This is a guy, married, children, all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's not like he was a mega supporter at a Trump rally that I'll laugh at when they get shot. But, you know, geez, runs a healthcare company. Okay, so. All right, America, that might be on the next list as to why people look down their nose at us, which in all honesty is the amount of public shootings here. This does not happen anywhere else, certainly not in the numbers that we have. So,
right.
That's a worthy thing for the rest of the world to look down their nose at.
Sure.
I'm going to combine the next two things on the list because one we already talked about, the entertainment industry, the influence on the world, and the financial markets here in America, their influence on the world. Again, though, this comes down to supply and demand. Our entertainment industry is better. Our companies are bigger and stronger and more influential. California itself is one of the largest economies in the world. So this is the free market at work. We wouldn't have these big successful companies or the entertainment industry dominating if it wasn't worthwhile. So the rest of the world, if you hate it, use your checkbook to admonish it. But you don't hate it. You do love Starbucks. You do love Hollywood.
And if it all goes away tomorrow, you guys will feel it. Believe me. Like, it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. And it's providing the opportunity for us to take care of some other people, whether it's, you know, going into Ukraine. Like, all of this stuff makes us the great nation that we are. So I don't know how you can look down your nose at us for being successful.
It's a great point. How do you think we're funding all of these operations all over the world, humanitarian efforts, and giving $1 billion in weapons to the Ukraine? And
yeah,
I've seen some Bollywood movies, okay? That's a very niche audience. We need Hollywood, okay? We'll do cheesy musicals, too. That's not all we do.
Yeah, and I love a Bollywood, dude, but come on, it can't be all Bollywood.
Right, exactly. The last thing I'll do on my list, and I'll throw it over to you, is technology dependence. Most countries rely heavily on American tech companies for essential services and infrastructures, whether it's software or hardware or social media. America leads the world in that. And again, supply and demand. Yep, we created Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Like, yeah, well, these are things we created in Silicon Valley. You know, Silicon Valley leads with all of this tech stuff, but those aren't a bunch of white farm boys working there either. People right. come from other countries to be part of this revolution going on here. And it's probably because the other countries aren't supporting it as well, or there's not the infrastructure, the systems already in place. So, you know, maybe we're leading the race, but anyone else on any of these things, businesses, entertainment, tech companies, you can take over, but you're not.
It's a great point, dude. It's also, it's not the people as much as it is your country supporting it? Because I know several people that are over here working from Europe, from India, that are working at Microsoft, you know, that are working at Google or whatever. They are here because their country doesn't support them in the efforts to make it happen like we do here. You can't be mad at that. Like, be thankful for that.
Yeah, I will say we are setting up a brain drain in this country with all of this anti-immigration talk and making visas and everything harder to get. Like, we want some of these very smart people, whatever country they're coming from, to come here. So the harder we make it, the more likely they are to stay wherever they are and do the next startup and whatever. So we got to be really careful in this whole anti-immigrant thing, because we need every level of immigration, from farm workers to tech companies to surgeons that want to come and practice here. Like, you know, let's not be so short-sighted.
Yeah, it's very myopic to think that, oh, we could just do everything here, right here in America. No, we can't. That ship has sailed a long time ago.
That ship sailed a long time ago, World War II. Hello, yeah. Who saw Oppenheimer? Most of those scientists were Germans that we brought over here to help with our systems. We have always relied on foreign help because we can bring them here and they can live in America and have this great culture and lifestyle, but we need their brain.
That's right. So, yeah, you're right. Don't be so short-sighted. Everyone just immediately goes to, like, the farm workers, and that is a big thing. But there's a lot of other industries where we bring people in from other countries that add significantly to what's happening here in America.
Yeah. It's what we're supposed to be, a melting pot. We want the brightest, the best. We want everything, because even if you're not the brightest when you get here, perhaps our education system and career opportunities will make you one of the brighter ones. By the way, fucking Elon Musk was an illegal immigrant. Everyone seems to forget that in the mega world. He came here. He seems to have done just fine. And, you know, he's a shitty boss, but he certainly built some businesses and put a lot of money into our economy.
Well, Trump would never be here, right? If it hadn't have been for birthright citizenship.
Well, almost because none of us would be here. If you're not Native American. So.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, with holidays coming up, Steve, it also brings on another issue that may happen with you, may happen with me, other folks in this vocal minority community. People are going to be staying at your house, whether it's for a week or, you know, just coming over for maybe 6 hours. And I came across a list of rude things you can do in someone else's house, according to etiquette experts.
All right. This is good and timely. I did just host Thanksgiving in my house, and I had a group of people, and that was fun. But I am going back to Michigan for New Year's. I'm going to be meeting Kennedy's family. I think we're staying at their house. And then likewise, she'll be coming to my side of the Mitten State and meeting my crew. And we'll be certainly doing dinners and stuff at relatives' houses. But pretty sure we're sleeping at my sister's house. So
it's interesting. I saw a survey, and I can't remember exactly what it said, but it was, you know, like 70% of people that are going home for the holidays plan to have sex in their childhood bedroom. Will you have any sex in any, you know, special places, childhood areas of your sister's house?
If I'm conscious, I imagine I'll be having sex somewhere, anywhere, and everywhere around the state of Michigan, yes.
Okay. Will you have sex in Kennedy's family's house? Will you go that far?
If the invitation is there, I would imagine yes. I mean, why not? Now, I don't have this whole childhood home thing. Like, I don't get to go home to my old bedroom with the Transformers poster on the wall.
Right.
So, you know, but staying in my sister's house, am I going to abstain from sex? No. Why would I do that?
All right. Well, some people would wonder, like, you know, you and I have had conversations before. Like, I had sex at your house and I was a little worried that, like, is it rude for me to have sex in your house? And especially because when I was there, you wanted me to have the master bedroom, your bedroom, the big suite. So I did have a little thought in my head for just an inkling, like, is it bad for me to have sex in this bed? And then I thought, it's Steve, dude. If he would be mad if I didn't have sex in this bed.
That's damn right. I want you to have all the benefits of the big bed. Now, if my dad was staying here and I gave him my bedroom, do I want him having sex in my bed? Probably.
Okay, so it's different with your best friend, but
yes, it's a don't ask, don't tell sort of system going on there for sure.
All and kinds of.
By the way, I am used to having children in my home. So when there are people around me, I know I'd have sex quietly. So that would be the etiquette, of course, when we're staying at relatives' houses for the holidays, too.
No headboard knocking, you know, no, just muffled enjoyment.
Oh, yes. Put the pillow over her face.
Yes. You're listening, Kennedy. I understand. When we come to this list of rude things you can do in someone else's house, the first one on there just made me think of you right away. Did this happen when you had people over for Thanksgiving? Did they touch and move things?
Yes.
Because apparently that's a big no-no.
Yes. And people do this, including your brother, when you guys were here. Why do people touch my stuff? I know my house looks like a museum, but you think these guitars and microphones everywhere are to be played with? Like, they're very strategically placed and they are display items only. Don't touch them. The hell, people. You know what that does to my OCD?
Are you allowed to touch if you ask first? Like, hey, do you mind if I play that guitar?
You should ask first, and I will tell you which ones are display models only.
Yes.
You two, when you stayed up drinking after I went to bed, tried to take one of my other guitars out and tune it up. I would have told you, I'm a million miles away, you're going to snap those strings. They haven't been changed in 20 years. But yeah, you guys tried to tune up a guitar and snap the strings. Then you feel guilty. Or the microphones I have on my kitchen counter, everyone touches those things. I spent so much time figuring out the exact center of that island in both directions to place the two microphones. And then people just pick, hey, check 1, 2. Is this thing working? I'm like, touch that.
You are so OCD. Let me back up for a minute because I want to take some time to throw my brother under the bus. First of all, I didn't touch that guitar and try and tune it. My brother did. And I told him, you're going to snap those strings. And what did he do? He snapped the string on it as he was trying to tune it up. It was so far gone and out of tune on a nylon string that I knew it was going to snap, but he just kept twisting. He just kept turning. And you were very gracious about it, but I knew that had to be killing you inside.
Listen, a broken guitar string is not the end of the world, but it's more the principle of, like, yes, don't touch stuff. Like, it was not meant to be touched. And yeah, why did you think you'd be able to tune up that old guitar? If you want to play guitar, there are two of them in this house, the black one behind me and my acoustic. They're playable. They're modern, tuned up, modern strings. Go ahead. But and the microphones, those things are antiques. Literally rusting from the inside. Like, don't play with these
things. Don't touch them. Don't do the old Jack 1, 2. Please.
My house is a museum. Look, don't touch.
Yeah. touching and moving things. You shouldn't do it when you go to people's houses. This is an interesting one. Don't demand a tour of someone's house. Wait to be invited by your host. Don't ask for a tour or demand if the host would like for you to see all areas of their house or just some of them. They will take you there.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't know the right answer on that. Because I often do want to give people a tour of my house, but I feel like that's almost a little arrogant or something. Like I have some home worthy of a tour, but you know, I have fun stuff. And there've been people that have come over and I don't give them a tour. And eventually either they ask or Kennedy just brought her son over here a couple months ago. And I didn't offer the tour because it seemed arrogant, but an hour in, she's like, "Hey, do you want to show them your studio or some of the guitars? Like, am I being a dick for not offering a tour?" And then how far does the tour go? Does it include the master bedroom? That's a big one, you know? How far do you take people in your home?
It's interesting, dude. I don't know. To be honest with you, I mean, there are certain people, like if you came to, I mean, when you came to my house for the first time, obviously I show you around because I'm so close with you and you hadn't seen it. If when my brother came, I'll show him around. But like if just random, you know, people that I probably won't see again for another 6 months or a year in my life aren't important to me, I'm not going to give you a tour of my house. If you ask, like, "Hey, where's your studio?" Then I might say like, "Oh, you want to go take a look or something?" But I'm not going to show you into my bedroom and everything else. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. It's a catch 22 in my world. Cause as you can see in my own studio here, this is what my whole house is like. I have things on display that I find visually awesome. So on one level, I feel like I'm tempting people to want to look and touch and all that, but
yeah,
I don't know what the line is, offering a tour, not selective tours. I don't know.
Well, if your son's friend comes over, do you give him a tour?
That's a good question. Usually I follow his lead or Kennedy's lead. If you ask me to, "Hey, can they see the dirt bikes or can you show them the studio, the guitars?" Like, yeah. But otherwise, no, I tend not to just offer.
"This is my master bathroom." Like, you know, no, I'm not going to take you back there. Why would I?
I did give a tour for one of the Thanksgiving attendees and it went all the way into my master closet. And wow. I'm just following his lead to some extent of like, "Master's back here," and he kind of walked all the way in. So I'm like, okay, like, you know, like your big walk-in closet. Oh, let me look. I don't know what the line is here, but okay. Yeah. I mean, it's all clean, so go ahead. But yeah, that's a weird one. So yeah. What was the point of this? It's rude to ask for a tour. It's rude to not offer.
It's rude to expect a tour. Don't demand a tour. It's basically saying wait to be invited by your host. If they want to show you around, that's one thing. But don't ask to be like, "Hey, can I see? You going to give me the grand tour or whatever?" Don't do that.
Okay. I will say that if people like me or you have cool stuff on display, I think the etiquette is just to start asking, "Hey, tell me about these microphones, guitars." And of course, ask if you can touch them. People. Jesus.
Yes. How about overstaying your welcome? This is a big one for some people. We all have those house guests that won't leave, whether it's, you know, for an evening and you're like, "God, when are you going to go, dude? We've been here for 7 hours." Or maybe it's a house guest that just wants to keep staying the night. Don't turn into an endless house guest. Know when it's time to leave. The number one complaint they hear from hosts is about guests who overstay their welcome.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't know what scenario, if I invite someone to stay at my house, they would just keep staying. You're in town for some window, so that seems odd.
Right, yeah, that'd be easier. But say you just invited, well, like your Thanksgiving dinner. If the guests at some point notice you're yawning or know you have to be up early, like even if you're having fun, and you notice the house owner starting to wind down or wear down, like, read the room, dude. You should know when to leave.
You should know, and a good guest will pick up on those nonverbal cues so you don't have to step up and say something. But I learned years ago that sometimes you have to.
What do you say?
Oh, I'll just tell them. There's an old thing about if you stand up, that's sort of a nonverbal cue. It's more interviews and stuff. But if I need a house guest to leave, I don't have any hesitation. I will. If I need you to leave, I will simply probably stand up and be like, "All right, guys, like we got to start to wrap this up. I got to get to bed. I got work tomorrow. Got to get the kids to bed. Like, You know, I will do something like that. Or I'm not afraid, like when you and your brother were here. I'm just telling you guys, like, all right, like, you guys can stay up and do whatever you want. I got to get going to bed. You know, I don't feel bad sort of standing up for myself that way.
Yeah, and I would guess that that's probably the right way to do it, because I didn't, the last thing that I would have thought was that that was rude. I thought it was more nice anyway, just to be like, hey, I got to head back, but you guys, the house is yours, you know? Yeah, you know, so maybe that's the right way to do it.
Sometimes it's awkward to find that pause in the conversation. Like if everyone's kind of going back and forth and having a good time and you're like, I got to get to bed. Sometimes it's tough to wait for that gap where you can jump in and be like, all right, I gotta wrap this up, everyone. But
for sure. You know that we have a mutual friend that he does the old Irish goodbye. And I hate it when he does it, because we're over having a great time. And then all of a sudden he just disappears and I find out he's in bed. He doesn't even tell me. And I let myself out of the house. I'm like, just tell me. I'm fading. I'm going to go to bed and I'll bail.
That's insane. I had never heard of it until you talked about Dan. And, you know, I've now heard the expression elsewhere, this Irish goodbye. But who the hell does that? You have house guests and you just disappear, leave people in your home? It's 100 times better to tell people I'm fading, I got to go to bed. Even if you offer, you guys can stay and let yourselves out. You don't just leave.
By the way, if the host says, like, you guys can, you know, stay here and just let yourselves out, like, go ahead and leave at that point. Like, it's weird if you stay. And, like, if Rachel and I were just to stay and keep watching TV, like, leave. I mean, read the room.
That is a read the room thing. Like, I'm going to offer you to stay, but obviously I'm telling you to leave.
Right.
At least we've had some communication. I had a dinner party years ago that taught me this lesson where it just kept going on. It was appetizers. We were at a restaurant. And then it was the full meal. And then people ordered dessert. This was like 3 hours in. I was so ready to go. And then the waiter came over and was like, does anyone want coffee? And I was like, I started saying, no, just the check. And these other people like, yeah, let's get coffee. I exploded. I can't do this. I've got to go. Enough already, people. Oh, my wife never let me live that down, but I was so over it. So I've learned, don't let yourself get to that point that you're going to explode on these people.
Yes, I remember that well. That is so damn funny. Another one on the list of things you shouldn't do if you're a guest in someone else's house is hiding a mess. They say, unfortunately, things happen when you're in another person's home. You might accidentally spill red wine on the carpet or knock over a lamp. Don't ignore or try to hide it. If you break something, come forward and let them know. If you finish a roll of toilet paper, let them know. Have you ever had somebody hide something in your house?
I don't know if I've caught something like that, but I've done it. It depends the scale of the party you're at. If you're at some big like holiday party at the boss's house and there's 50 of you there or something, like, hell no, I'm not going to confess that I spilled wine. I'll pull the rug and just hope for the best.
Yeah.
I'm at your house, like, yes, of course I would tell you, dude, I spilled. Can we get this cleaned up? Or you're out of toilet paper. But no, if I'm at some big thing where I don't know the owner very well, I'm not comfortable, hell no, I'm not confessing any.
See, it's a tough one for me because, well, it goes back all the way to like a 7-year-old young Nikki Reynolds. I was over at my neighbor's house. The mother made lunch for all of us. And there was something on that sandwich that didn't agree with me. And I didn't want to tell her and offend her. So I took it out and I put it under the table and sort of started mashing it into the carpet. Okay. And this mom found it after we all got up. Well, the little kid's sister was sitting next to me. She got spanked in front of me for doing it. And I did never admit that I did it. So I now will never do that again.
No, you played that correctly.
I mean, I did.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I don't know if you should have smashed it originally, but once you've committed, no, don't back down at that point.
Okay.
Deny, deny, deny.
All right. The next one on the list is snooping. Everyone likes to be a little snoopy-doop. Refrain from peeking in cabinets and cupboards. Of course, it's natural to be a little curious, but this exact behavior has been in countless movies, and we can't resist the urge to look inside cabinets to get the lowdown on what's happening in your town.
Yeah, I can highly resist the urge. I don't know that I've ever snooped. I mean,
never.
I really don't think so. I mean, maybe if I've been dating a woman for a few months, I may peek in the cabinet and see what's going on there. But no, certainly not at some dinner party. I'm not looking through people's cupboards and whatnot. I don't know what I'm hoping to gain. If I get caught, I look like a major asshole. And you just don't know. So what if you find some old fungal cream that could be from 10 years ago? Another house guest could have left it. Like, what are you hoping to glean from this? You want to find their dildos and laugh at them or something? Like, I don't know what is to gain from it.
You're in the minority, my friend, because most people take a little quick peek and it is for juvenile stuff, like exactly like you're talking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, reap what you sow. I was a snoop as a kid, looking around my parents' rooms and my sister's rooms and stuff, but I grew out of that. But I have kids and they have people over. I would assume they're kids and they snoops. I don't really hide anything. I feel like if you want to open my drawer and find sex toys, like, well, good luck getting that out of your head ever, kid. You're going to be right in therapy discussing that for the next 20 years. So yeah. Careful what you wish for, you know?
Yeah, I think it's more you got to worry about, you know, the people like me or, you know, you're close in age, like people that are my brother looking through your cabinet. So what he hopes to find, I don't know. But people seem to do it a lot and they say you shouldn't do it. Just don't get in. That should be so obvious. Don't get into people's private shit, dude. You're a guest in their house.
It may set up an inferiority complex in your part because you're going to see all the cool sex toys and bongs I have and old Transformers or whatever I've got in my drawers.
Like, bars of gold.
Right. You're going to feel inadequate after you snoop in my house, but go ahead.
All right, let's blast through the last couple of these. Bringing an uninvited plus one, obviously a no, okay?
Yeah, that's easy, and it's so easy to ask, so I don't know why anyone would bring an uninvited guest.
How about waiting to share dietary restrictions? Dietary restrictions should be shared well in advance.
Yeah, I would agree. But those better be some actual restrictions, like you're allergic to a nut or something.
Yes.
Not just be like, I don't like this or that or whatever. Don't be picky about it.
100% agree. This is a good one. Don't feed the dog. Like, you should always ask. The dog may get sick if it eats human food or something like that. There may be something they can't have. So don't feed people's dog, please.
I hate that. Yeah, you don't know what dietary things my dog or cat is on, and human food is almost always bad for pets, and you're starting a terrible habit. But to even go one step further than that, our old producer, Brewski, his wife back in the old days in Seattle, like 2002 or whatever, we had just gotten our puppy, Charlie, our golden retriever, and we were all sitting around passing the bong, and she grabbed Charlie by the snout and blew a hit in his... Trying to get my dog stoned. And I was just like, what are you doing? And she was like, oh, it's funny when dogs get stoned. They act all goofy. I'm like, you're drugging my pet. Like,
yes.
Are you kidding me? I would never do that. And you freaking better ask me.
Yeah. Don't disrespect the shoe rule, Harness. If usually you walk in, you say, do you want me to take my shoes off? And then you should do it. If people want your shoes off, follow their rules, please.
I always follow the shoe rule. However, I'm a hypocrite, I guess, because I would rather you took your shoes off in my house, but I will never tell someone to do it.
Okay. I always ask, do you want me to take my shoes off? And if I see you take your shoes off, I'm definitely going to take mine off, right?
Because if it's a big party, I feel like I got to clean the floors anyway, so what do I care? I don't want to inconvenience people, but people would ask, and I usually tell them, like, yeah, ideally, but I don't actually care.
Right.
I do care. Okay. I'd like them to, but I just don't want to lay down the smack.
The very last one, showing up empty-handed, and let you be the judge of that. When you're invited to someone's home, do you show up with a bottle of wine? Something like that?
I kill two birds with one stone. I take all of my hidden bongs and sex toys, and I bring those as a gift to someone else's house.
Oh, that is perfect, dude. What a way to wrap it up with sex, drugs, and a little rock and roll.
I mean, you don't need a cheese platter, but some new vibrators. I bet everyone could find good use for that. So that's my holiday tip to everyone.
Are they still got a little crust on them, or do you wash them before you bring them over? That's the good question. Time.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You should always be clean. Polite. It's like fruit at the store. They may be clean technically at the grocery store, but I always wash it before I use it. So.
Okay. Well, there you go, dude. You're going to be the hit of the party wherever you stay this holiday season. Don't be a jackass and try and remember some of these pointers we gave you here on The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve.
We are here to help. So find the website, thevocalminority.net. More importantly, though, find our social medias. Comment, like, share, all that stuff. YouTube, TikTok, Reddit, those are the big ones. Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky. Blue Sky is a good one, too. Find us there.
And call or comment line, 844-48-VOCAL. Until next time.
Hello, my mini champions. It's your favorite old bag, Betty White. This has been a production of The Vocal Minority with Nick and Steve. New podcasts are released twice a week. Don't forget to watch The Golden Girls wherever great TV is watched.
You stay classy, San Diego.